Log Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. We had originally scheduled this program for Sunday, but court was in session, so we decided to postpone. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon. Hope everyone had a good 4th of July.
From the City of Angels, our good friend and attorney, never know when you might need one, Manny Barling. Manny, good morning to you.
Well, good morning. If you hang around with me, you'll need one soon.
I do hope that you and Ashley had a great 4th of July.
It was wonderful here, and I hope all our listeners had a great time, too. I thought it was a wonderful celebration of our country and our freedom this year.
From upper New York State, we have crime writer, mob expert, the crime doctor, Denny Griffin. Denny, welcome.
Well, thank you, Simon. Glad to be with you, and we're finally in Verdict Watch, so I'm very excited, and I hope you and the rest of the panel and Jan and the listeners all had a very nice holiday.
Let me guess. You spent your 4th at a barbecue with some of your favorite ex-mobster friends.
Yeah, some favorites and some not so favorites.
I just knew mobsters would be involved.
Careful, they may be listening.
Oops. From Ground Zero, Orlando, Florida, we have Orlando Magazine journalist Dave Knackle. Dave, welcome.
Well, hello, everyone. Hello, Simon. I spent my 4th.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm not even going to ask you how you spent your 4th of July, because I already know. You were in the courtroom.
Yes, I was.
Yes, I was.
Lucky me.
And, of course, we have our great friend and prime antagonist, William Cobra Storbs. Mr. C, welcome to the program.
Hey, Simon. I'm getting ready, buddy. Getting ready. Getting ready.
As always, our chat room is open, and we do invite listeners to ask their questions of us in there. We also ask you all to be kind to each other. All right, on with the program. So, the prosecution and defense have rested their case. It's now in the hands of the jury. Manny, I want to start with you. You've participated in many, many trials. How often have you seen a court sit on a Sunday or July the 4th?
Well, I've never seen either of them, frankly. I think this is one of the rare cases where I've seen a case come to an end on a holiday weekend with a sequestered jury. He had a choice of letting the jury go home to their family or rot in a hotel cursing him, and he elected that, if they're stuck there, it would be unfair for the judge and the lawyers to go home and have barbecues, and I think that was stuck upon him, and he just had no choice in this case. Had it ended earlier, he might have done this and allowed them to sit alone and deliberate on the weekend while they went away, but you can't take a jury, put them in a weekend from Friday and Tuesday morning while you're having a barbecue and not expect consequences. And I think that the rare timing that goes with this case is what resulted in that.
Denny, you've been, a follower of many trials. Can you think of an instance where court's been in session on a Sunday and, more importantly, Monday, that happens to be July the 4th?
Not a single time, Simon. Not a single time. And last night on one of the shows, they said that for Orange County, that courthouse has never been open for any reason on the 4th of July. First time in history.
Dave, I know that you haven't followed as many trials as maybe Manny and Denny has, but I mean, were you shocked the Sunday and Monday gig?
Well, the Sunday part wasn't so unusual, but I can tell you that something happened in my life that changed history too. Is that first time in my life that I was in a courtroom on the 4th of July. So, I was really surprised because I asked some of the deputies and they all said, well, we're going to get double time for that. So a lot of them didn't have any problem with it. So there was time and a half for weekend days and double time for holidays. So it was a good day for them.
Yeah. I mean, Jen, were you shocked? You know, Sunday and then the 4th of July?
Well, yeah, I was shocked, but, I mean, you can't blame them. I mean, who wants to sit in a courtroom, I mean, in a hotel room away from your family and all that without doing anything at all? So you can't blame them. Judge Perry has been really good to this jury. So he looked out for them, so... Yeah, it was for their benefit mostly, so.
You know, as I was watching the story unfold on the 4th of July, I was thinking back to the infamous O.J. Simpson trial. It seemed to me that Judge Ito seemed to recess at the slightest opportunity. And quite frankly, if someone had pointed out to him March 21st should be a vacation day, he'd have gone for it. Anyone know why March 21st should be a national holiday?
Are you talking about the Ides of March?
No, the Ides of March.
That's the day the new Cadillac come out.
No, March 21st. Is National Pi Day. Oh. Pi as in P-I. 3.21.
Oh. Careful, this is the United States where the average teenager doesn't associate anything with pi except pi.
Okay. Let's move on from pi. Jen, I'm going to put you on the hot spot. What happens when you flip the bird at Jeff Ashton?
That's a definite no-no. You better have your, how is it that Judge Perry told the attorneys? You better have your ATM card available really quick.
Or your toothbrush.
Yeah, that's true, too. And your toothbrush. Yeah, you get into big trouble when you do things like that. This poor guy... $400 plus court costs, which was $200-something extra, and 6 days in jail. But he was released this morning, though, they said. That's
you know what I like about it? What I liked about it was when the judge was reading off, first of all, he could have denied it and just said, oh, I was just having a moment. But I give him credit for his honesty. He didn't have to be honest in that. Yeah. But when the judge said that'll be $400 for this, $200 for that, and $200 for that, he said, I have the money right now. Thinking, I guess, that he was going to bond right then and there and no jail time. So the judge said, well, how much money do you have on you?
Yes.
He said, well, I got $126 in my checking account, and I got $26 in my savings account. The judge said, well, I need 6 months to pay. But everybody asked, why only 6 days? And why such a small fine? And I said, because there's a whole hell of a lot of other people, including the judge, that wanted to flip him off, too, so they took mercy on him.
Nah. I still don't quite understand how Casey got away with doing it on the camera twice, and this boy got caught one time and got fined for it. So.
It, Dave, I think you were in the courtroom as this all came down. Did it come as a surprise to you? 6 days? Ouch!
No. By the way, did you just to pass on this information, because it's crucial that everyone knows that should know that yesterday, today, lunch was provided by Chick-fil-A. So I think that's important for everyone to know that that's what the jury ate today.
Well, that's why they let him out early, so he could go fix that Chick-fil-A for him. That's where the guy worked, I do believe.
No, TGIF, wasn't it?
I think it's more important what William and Kate are having for lunch, actually.
I thought the guy worked at TGIF.
Oh, that guy. What an idiot.
Right.
So, go ahead.
Nope, carry on, Dave.
No, I'm ready to rock and roll.
You're ready to rock and roll.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm picking up some little bits of information here and there, and then I'll pass them on as I get them, Chick-fil-A.
I mean, this is obviously a crucially important nugget, chicken nugget of information.
Yeah, right.
You know, guys, I'm very disappointed in the whole bias thing, because he sure did screw up my numbers and predictions. Now, what I would like to know is that I called immediately when I found out that Jesse was going to take the stand, and I think word got around real quick. And what I don't understand is why someone didn't read these depositions properly. It kind of tied in with the crump moving of the body and them knowing where the body was, because that's what Hoover told us. They knew where the body was. That's why they were trying to obtain Jesse's DNA. Why that never made it in there, that would have, to me, been a slam dunk. And
why they
didn't do it, I don't know.
Okay, Cobra, hold that thought.
Okay.
All right? We will get to it. All right. Second bit of amusement, if you can call it that, was the business of Jeff Ashton smirking during Bias's presentation. Dave, did you catch that one?
I heard some. I couldn't see him doing it, of course, because I'm sitting behind him and above. So I couldn't see that. I couldn't even really hear that he was snickering. But obviously, it created such an uproar that that the judge had to put everything on hold. He went back and he watched that video of it, and it was a little bit, upsetting. You're not supposed to react like that, I guess.
Yeah, but it was because of Baez's remark that pointed it out to the judge to begin with. But look how many times have anybody watched the smirks and the laughing that Baez and Chaney Mason did during the trial? And nobody said a word about it. But the one time that Jeff Ashton does it and Baez points it out to everybody in the courtroom while he was speaking to the jury, I mean, then they're going to make a big deal out of it.
Well, the judge blamed both of them. He didn't say
right.
It was one. That's one
I'm
thing
saying.
I've noticed. Well, but hold on. I mean, as long as I've been watching this trial and even the hearings, the judge has been very fair. If he sees somebody doing something wrong, he either points it right out to that person or he throws everybody together and says, there'll be no more of this in my courtroom. So let that be a lesson to everyone. So I think that's one of his ways of showing fairness. There's nothing lopsided. There's nothing that points to Baez or Casey not getting a fair trial. So, and I think that maybe, knowing Ashton's reputation, maybe the judge holds him to a higher standard, too. But I don't think, I think that if Baez did it and the judge didn't hear it one time or whatever, then he sees it actually happen, he's going to look at it and say what he said, what he thinks. And in this case, it was probably not the right thing to do. But, Valias can be really funny. I mean, there's no doubt about that, and so unprofessional. But you really don't expect it, to come from someone like Ashton.
No, you don't. But like I said, Baez is the one that pointed it out. Judge Perry didn't even see it because of Baez's big, huge, whatever it was on the board, something, whatever it was he was displaying. But he did go out and watch it on the video. But, I mean, and then Jeff Ashton even admitted, okay, Judge, I don't need to see the video. I'll take your word for it. And old Mason gets up, I want to see it. And you know the little speech that Baez said afterwards was not out of his mouth. I guarantee you Mason told him, look, you've got to say this. Because it was like pulling his teeth out of his mouth for him, those words coming out of his mouth.
Well,
okay.
Let me shed some light on this. First of all, there's a different standard in final argument than there is during a trial. It is not uncommon for lawyers to sit back and mimic their opposition and play these games. I laughed, but I thought what Ashton did was totally out of bounds for final argument. He knew it was totally out of bounds. No one had to tell him. But in all fairness to him, what happens is we have reactions as lawyers, and sometimes you listen to the other side, and I don't care what you do. You get annoyed with them. You get sick of them. And those two certainly have more than their share of personal issues between them, and they explode. But no lawyer likes to see another lawyer being sanctioned. I also did not think that Baez, I watched it live, and I didn't think that Baez was trying to embarrass him. He was just, in the heat of the battle, annoyed and reacted to him, and afterwards was sorry that he probably reacted the way he did, because he obviously let Ashton get under his skin, and he didn't really intend to do that either. So I think that's some of it. And I just think that at times that people ascribe too many meanings to it. And the judge can't see him because where Ashton was sitting, he was essentially blocked.
Right.
So what happens is he's blocked, the judge can't see him, and a lot of guys, look at juries and they shake their head when it's something they disagree, they nod. So if the jury likes the prosecutor, or, in a civil trial, they like that particular lawyer, sometimes it has an effect on the jury, and sometimes juries do watch the other lawyer to see what the reaction is to get some feeling for the case. So there are a lot of reasons why this goes on, but usually, and I think this is what happened watching it live, was just an explosion of emotions from Baez, who'd been, doing his little speech the whole morning and afternoon and working hard. And then you saw him kind of snicker at him, and he just exploded. I don't think he intended anything more than that.
Okay, here's the big question. This trial has been a number of firsts. It's the first time that smell has been admitted as expert evidence, and to the best of my knowledge, it's the first time that a court has taken a page out of the NFL's playbook and used instant replay. Many, have you ever seen instant replay done?
You mean as I'm looking what lawyers have done in the... Oh, yes, I've seen it quite common. See, what separates this case for you is these are common in cities like New York City and Los Angeles, where they have a lot of big cases, a lot of severely contested items. And I don't mean just type of criminal, but like when Walt Disney sues MGM, for example, or some major corporation like that that's housed in L.A. So you see an awful lot of that. As far as the weekend trial, I've seen a lot of Saturdays, but no Sundays. But again, we're in a jurisdiction that has unusual problems, and I'm sure Denny will tell us about how different New York City can be in terms of, particularly in some of the mafia trials and how different rules apply. And as far as some of the other firsts, everything is caused by unique circumstances. nor in Florida have they had a case like this. This is, oh, nor in the really the nation lately. So one of the issues here is that everything about this case is somewhat of a first time, right? I mean, there's no standard when you have a first time case. Literally everything's new. And so when I look at this case, I see that as a product. There were there was once a case involving Sam Shepard, the famous Sam Shepard case, which is the basis of the TV show and movie The Fugitive. Everything in that was a first. Al Ewing Scott, they never found the body in California, and it was the first case. And basically they call it in my profession a case of first impression, and we get these constantly. Even in the civil law, I mean, people get together and they create facts that couldn't be dreamed up for a movie, and then a lawsuit file. So everything that happens in that case is a case of first impression, and that's sort of what we have here.
Denny, you've been very quiet. Do you have any commentary?
Yeah, I want to talk about the Ashton so-called outburst or his facial expression issue. I think Manny just said that he thought and is sure that Ashton knows better and knew better than to do that. He was apparently caught up in the heat of the moment and couldn't help himself. Ashton had another incident earlier during the prosecution case, I believe, when he showed Dr. Vass some evidence, and it was the wrong evidence. It wasn't anything earth-shattering, but it gave Baez that day a little bit of a victory that he hadn't earned on his own. It was kind of a gift. And my position on this is that this is a fight to the death, if you will, for everybody here. It's a very serious matter, and as looking at it as almost a conflict, a military conflict. It's a no-prisoner situation, and to give the other side anything on which they can hang their hat, which could damage your chances, maybe a juror saw it, maybe they didn't, whatever, anything that might cause someone to develop a dislike for the prosecutor, or if Baez had done it for the defense, either way. So I was very disappointed as a pro-prosecution guy in this case that Ashton did that, because I didn't want to see the prosecution hand the defense any gifts. I think they should go for the juggler and no freebies. So I was disappointed not only in the conduct itself, but the fact that in this case, to give this crew an inch disappointed me.
Okay. Let's move on a little bit. I want to talk about closing arguments in general, and I want to go round the table. Just short, punchy comments. We'll get into the pros and cons in a minute. How did they do? Did the prosecution do a good job? Did the defense do a good job? Jen, what are your thoughts?
I think the defense did a fairly good job until the prosecution came back with theirs, and I think that just blew the defenses out of the water.
Dave?
Well, I agree with Jan. I think Baez did a much better job than anyone expected. I mean, I think he really he made up for a lot. It was a command performance. And I wondered, how is the state going to top this? Before I left that day, I was talking to one of the deputies. We were getting ready to leave for the day, and I said, well, what do you think it's going to be tomorrow? And he said it was going to be both Ashton and Burdick. So that was kind of interesting, and I've always kind of felt that Burdick is kind of like so methodical that she's more monotonal than anything else, where Ashton is more like a fire and brimstone preacher. But the way Burdick finished that closing argument was just absolutely a work of art. I couldn't believe how she came across. It was just utterly, it just blew me off my feet. So that's what took it away. Whatever Baez did the day before, and he did a damn good job, she kind of like blew him right out of the water.
Exactly.
Benny, do you share that view?
I think I'm pretty much in agreement. The defense-wise, Baez was passionate. In fact, he did better than I anticipated. But he had to work within the hand he'd been dealt, and I don't think he had a lot of ammunition in his quiver. In fact, one analyst said that had Baez been playing Texas Hold'em, his hand would be deuce three off suit. I mean, there's only so much you can do with it. I thought he did a good job for what he had to work with, but I agree the rest of the prosecution rebuttal was, in my opinion, shut the door.
Cobra, one or two sentences from you.
Well, Baez set it up and she finished it. Baez said she's a slut and a liar, or a liar and a slut, and the young lady finished him off and said, you know what, I agree.
Okay. Manny, I'm sure you have analyzed.
No, I don't overanalyze things like this way I listen to all of you do it. I expected him to do very, very well in final argument. I would expect that would be the area that he excelled, because he doesn't excel in other areas. And when I listened to him, I realized that's also his first love. So he was probably looking forward to this more than any other part of the case. And in fact, it might have been a good idea for them to put him in the closet until final argument came on. Some lawyers excel at it, but they don't like doing the other work. And
I gotta go. Somebody's telling me that the verdict is in.
Then it's a guilty verdict this quick.
Okay, Dave.
He's going to report
I don't know.
I was going to raise that the quicker the jury came in, because it takes about a day and a half just to get through all these instructions.
Okay, I don't know if our listeners caught that. Dave has to literally run out the door.
It's official.
It looks like a verdict is in, and we could have it in about 30 minutes. Woohoo!
Wow. Guess what? She's not guilty.
Because it ain't no damn way
in hell that they went through all that and found her guilty. Now that's too short. She's innocent, baby.
generally the view is the opposite. Generally the view is that a quick verdict is a guilty verdict.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I told you this was going to happen.
Well, Dave's gone, so I can't tell him I'm definitely watching. I turned it on live like all the rest of it. I'm getting so high tech here. I know how to find live streams.
Manny, let me ask you a question about that, about the time of deliberation, the time expended. There was a lot. There were seven charges, I believe, in the indictment. Of course, three or four of them were the misdemeanor, false information to police charges.
Yeah, there were seven.
There was all this stuff about, from murder one to felony murder to child abuse or aggravated child. It seems like without asking for a single look at a document, a single look at any testimony, a single look at anything, they could have gone through each and every one of those possibilities in this short of time to find her not guilty.
Well, no. Actually, I think it's the other way around. If you find, do you understand lesser and included crimes? If you find the major crime, first-degree murder, then aggravated child abuse goes away. So is the aggravated manslaughter of a child. That's all included within that. So the likelihood is they considered the major one first-degree murder or murder, period. And if they found that, they wouldn't even consider the others, except giving false information to the police. And at that point, who cares? Because if they found her guilty of murder, they obviously found her guilty of false information.
Well, that, I guess, was my point. If they started with the top most serious charge, premeditated first degree, and couldn't reach a unanimous verdict on that, then wouldn't they have to consider a second degree possible? In other words, what I'm saying is...
Yeah, they work. It trickles down. You just go down in sequence and keep going down and resolving in sequence of their importance. Exactly, Danny.
So if not guilty on murder one, for example, and they had to start going down the stairs, it seems like they got and found her not guilty on each and every charge. It seems though they did that awful quick.
Well, I don't think
it's non-guilty verdict on all of them.
Well, I don't see that happening at all.
Good, Danny. I believe the same thing because it was too damn quick. Because just to read into all of it, the lies of the cops. But I think the guilty, the 5-year sentence that you get for murder and third degree felony, whatever it is, 5 years for that, 4 years for lying to cops. Run them consecutively. She's already done 3. She's out in 2. That's my prediction.
Okay.
That'll be interesting.
Okay.
Wow. So what were you smoking this morning?
Marlboros, by God. Marlboros.
Boy, those are
okay,
stronger
Jim,
than they
I,
used
I
to be.
I have to ask you. I mean, what's your prediction? What are they going to find her guilty of?
I still can't give up on the first-degree murder, but with life without parole, not to death.
Can't happen.
How long till they're going to announce it?
Can't happen.
It can happen. Yeah, it can happen.
I
ain't
going to
give up
mad.
On them yet.
I'm going to get you smoking mad, and then you bust Simon upside the head. That's what Paula's doing to me.
We'd never do that to you. Oh my goodness!
Manny, do you think death is still on the table?
Probably not, because there's too many unknown factors, and she didn't take the stand. If she took the stand, she would definitely got the death penalty. But I'll give you perspective from someone on the West Coast, Texas and Florida. To us. Have the most amazing capacity to convict people for murder and then execute them. So from our standpoint, we assume that people are just going to be guilty and that's just the way it's going to be. So, and what I don't agree with, particularly Cobra on, is there's a predilection to basically convict people. The basic feeling is if the prosecutor and the grand jury, you know, indicted you, then you must be guilty. And that feeling pervades the industry. So until someone is found innocent, I just believe they're going to be found guilty every single time.
Well, many, I do agree with you. That's why I'm a bondsman who does not write bail bonds. I only go and hunt them for that same purpose. I used to believe that if the police arrested you, then you must have done it. So I believe that. Up until the part where I got arrested, but I kind of still hang on to that. You must have did it, otherwise they wouldn't have got you. So that's why I don't write bail, but I'm able to write bail, but I don't. And that's the only reason I don't, for that same premise. But my girl says that if she doesn't get the death penalty, she will when she hits the street.
Okay, here's the big question. Let's assume that murder one is found to be, guilty. What are the likely appeal strategies? Manny, I know you and I have talked about this. She can't go for ineffective counsel right off the bat, I don't think.
Well, I think it's a waste of time in a state like Florida, personally. I mean, she's not going to win in a lack of effective counsel, and you've got to have some glaring mistake. And again, the test is what they call, not reversible. Really, what's reversible error? Because to a great extent, the court's going to look at the trial as a whole and decide whether or not she would have been found guilty as a whole. Now, that sounds like a strange thing to say, but they sort of become judge and jury themselves to decide whether or not the evidence is sufficient. If they do, they just basically say no harm, no foul. This particular thing might have been wrong or the lawyer made a mistake, but the outcome is going to be the same. So if the court feels that the outcome is going to be the same, I don't care what she argues. And again, someone tell me what the reversal rate is in Florida, but I'll bet you it's not very high.
It's the pitcher that's going to do it for, Manny. The pitcher is going to do it for. Not a reversible error by Baez, except for calling her a liar and a slut. But the pitcher that the duct tape, the imposed pitcher, that's her out later on down the road. But I don't think she's going to need it.
I think it's harmless error. Yeah, well, you know, what I appreciate about you is someone has to give us an adverse voice, and certainly you do a great job of it, Cobra, but I wonder when we hang up the phone with you, really believe it or not.
I believe it like this. She's guilty. She had no compassion. Here's the deal. And my girl's sitting beside me, and she's been beating the hell out of me on this thing.
Good.
You know, she wants to give the duck. She agrees with Jan. She wants the death penalty. But here's the way I cut it and cut it down to the bone. Whether the child drowned in the pool or whether she killed this child so she could go have her thing, whichever happened that caused the death of this child, she's glad. She's glad it happened, period and simple. And that makes her guilty in my mind. But I can't say first-degree murder. Maybe it was an accident, but she's happy that it happened. Period, end of story.
I think she was happy it happened. I don't think she's happy anymore.
No, she's not.
Simon. I want to change gears just for a second. Lives have been forever changed. We may not like George and Cindy Anthony. They're not quite the upstanding middle class family that, you know, they first appeared. We have the Grunns. We have Roy Kronk. Their lives have been forever altered. Was it fair? I mean, there's been character assassinations. Many. Does Roy Kronk, for example, have any comeback on this?
No. This, you know, these are all privileged by the fact that they're a public forum, and basically, no, there's no way. What happens is they always say, well, time cures everything. I don't agree. These people carry these things forever, and that association just goes on forever and ever and ever, and these people are stuck with their relationship to this case. You know, and in the case of the Anthony family, this is something they're never going to get off their shoes. It's going to stick to them the rest of their life. And there's nothing they can do. There's going to be no place where their life will be comfortable without people, you know, whispering and all the things that go with what would normally be a small town. I mean, they've now created the whole United States as a small town, and they may have to change their name.
Cobra, you're pretty close to the Grund family. I mean, they must be hating life. You know, win, lose, or draw, they end up losing. Everyone knows Richard and Jesse Grund. How can they pick their lives up and move on?
That's a magic word. It's called civil trial. And they will pick their life up and move on. And they've been damaged probably the hardest of the whole thing. But we've been waiting for this to get over with so we can start round two. And they were put on the witness list just to protect them from talking. But now it's gonna happen now.
Well, interesting enough, when you look at these situations with these cases, not only do you have the issues you're talking about with the parallel witnesses, but you have a lot of other data that comes out that were not admitted at trial, most of which all of you know, but a lot of the general public don't know, and specifically things that Cobra alludes to, but, you know, feels he can't really discuss. And so there's a lot more going to come out, and people go, well, why wasn't that offered at trial, which sort of sponsors a secondary level of criticism.
Denny, I want to bring you into the discussion. That there's been a lot of collateral damage Do you think that the state will be ballsy enough to go after Cindy Anthony for perjury?
I would like to see that, and not, this is not a personal thing against Cindy Anthony, although she's not my favorite person, but I just think in a capital murder case, if you got them pretty much cold for perjury, I really don't see how you can not do something to send a message that's not acceptable. And I understand it's her daughter, and she's the victim because of the granddaughter and all that, and I'm not saying it's easy, but it's just my personal opinion that it's a bad signal to not do anything. It kind of says, that's okay, don't worry about it. So I don't know if they're going to go after her or not. I personally don't think they will. I would like to see it, though, because I think I just don't think you can sweep it under the table or let it slide. I think there has to be something done to indicate it's not acceptable behavior. And the other thing, Simon, I wanted to ask, we talked about Baez and Ashton and Burdick and so forth. What about Chaney Mason? I had never heard of him until this trial, but I understood that he had a lengthy career, highly respected attorney and so on, and his role was limited. You know, he did a couple of witnesses and made some of the motions about mistrials and so on and so forth. But I got to tell you, maybe it was just his style or his voice or something, but I was not that impressed, and I'm wondering, did he do a better job than I thought, or was he unimpressive? And I know he opened the door a couple of times, along with Baez, for the prosecution to get different information in that might have been inadmissible. So I just don't know. What was Mason's role in this, and how is this going to affect him for the future, especially if there's a guilty verdict?
Okay, Manny, that question obviously is aimed at you.
Well, I don't think it affects any lawyer in that respect, unless they make such a fool out of himself that people remember longer than they remember other things. And he was so much on the periphery, the guy who's going to bear the flak is going to be Baez, because he was the one everybody saw every day. But, you know, and by the way, I wanted to raise that, a subject besides that. Have anyone considered what happens to the people, for example? Well, even look at the Anthonys. Where do they go to try and sell their home? They're not going to be able to sell that home. People go, she might have died there, or a million other things. And this has some really far-reaching effects in areas that that people don't generally consider. So there's a lot of other issues besides that. But as far as attorneys' reputation, people don't even remember. I mean, I've had high-profile cases and gone to, to cocktail events while I was appearing, days that I was appearing on TV, and found people saying, gee, what are you doing? You know, in fact, one of my favorite stories, I ran into my old friend Johnny Cochran on the elevator during the O.J. Simpson trial in the CCW building, and we were going up on a case that I was in trial on, and he hopped in the elevator, and I said, hey, Johnny, how you doing? I said, so what have you been doing lately? And he just broke up laughing. So, you know, there actually are people out there who don't give a damn about this case, most of them men, and since most attorneys' fees are paid by men, generally they're not going to even notice it. Well, they're not going to notice whether that lawyer was involved and how he did unless somebody tells them.
Okay, Denny, one more question for you. The defense's character assassination of George Anthony was totally expected. Didn't come as a surprise to anyone. But were you surprised by the state's assassination of Cindy?
Well, when she testified a couple of weeks ago, I guess it's now, that about that computer search business and that, I was there, and I was home that day regardless of what my work records say, I thought then, I said, holy mackerel, if that is true, you know, it's going to damage the premeditation, at least one of the areas where the state says it shows premeditation. And I said, if it's not true, the state can't. They just can't ignore it, or out of some kind of sympathy for the grieving grandmother or grieving mother. They can't just let it go. I really felt they had no choice. if they're out to win the case, and you know, they couldn't just let her get away with it and go unchallenged if they could refute it and impeach her. And they did, and, you know, she took her chances when she made the statement, and she got caught. I felt the state did what needed to be done with her.
Okay, I don't want to do this, but I absolutely have to do this. We're going to kill the show early because we, all of us, want to watch what's going on.
Simon, I want to make one quick comment about what was just said, about Cindy Anthony. One of the problems with this kind of perjury is it can prolong trials. And if they feel this trial was prolonged because of her efforts, then they'll have a completely different attitude about prosecuting her. And that's probably the case.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I'm going to go once around the table, and we're going to be staring into the crystal ball. What's going to happen? Jan.
All I can say is praying for verdict to be a justice for Kaylee. She's the one that matters.
Okay. Do you see first degree?
Yes, first degree with life without parole.
All right. Manny. Someone's got their computer speakers on, and if I was going to blame someone, I'd say it's Cobra.
That ain't me.
It's not me. We know it's not you because you don't have any, right, Simon?
I'm driving. Don't.
I do, but mine's off.
I'm driving.
Manny, your prediction. What are they going to come up with?
I think it'll be guilty of first-degree murder, and I think that's why there was a short deliberation. I think that the book is still out on the death penalty for a variety of reasons, and we won't know that until there's a hearing on that issue.
Denny.
Yes, I think she's going to be found guilty of one of the more serious death-related charges, plus the lying to police. Even if it is first degree, the death, if she's actually sentenced to death, I'd be surprised. I think I'm more in agreement with Jan that life without parole, but I do think she's going to be found guilty of one of the more serious death-related charges.
And I'll give you my prediction. Death penalty off the table. I just can't see that sticking at all. But I'm with Denny. One of the majors is going to be found to be true. And obviously the lying to the cops is going to be found true. I think she's facing life imprisonment.
Simon, I got to ask you real quick. They've been saying that anything short of a death sentence, anything short of first-degree premeditated and so on, is going to be a victory for the defense, and they're going to be out hullabalooing the great job they did. My question is, if you've taken what they claimed was an accident and ended up with life without parole, how can that be a victory?
Oh, because
right.
They know it's first-degree murder.
Okay.
Cobra, your prediction.
Oh, yeah, I'm the opposite of all you guys. The lying to the cops, guilty. The death penalty, totally out the wall. She'll get charged on the lesser of all. I say she's on the street in 2 years or less. And, you know, as far as Cindy Anthony, if they will just wait until we get a conclusion to our civil trial, they will convict her, too.
Ouch. Okay, folks. I really think we should wrap this up because it's hard to yak and follow the video feeds. I want to thank all of our panel for joining us today. And what's the betting that we'll be doing a show on Sunday to talk about the verdict?
Yeah.
Nine
Thank
out
you
of ten.
Being here today.
Yeah. Well, we'll
I'm gonna have to apologize. I'm gonna have to eat crow, humble pie. Y'all bring plenty of milk.
She's discussing whether or not she'll get the death penalty, which I don't think. I agree with Simon. I don't think she'll either.
I'll tell you what, Cobra, that the whole bunch of us are going to come visit you and threaten to kick your front door in.
Oh, sounds like fun. I'm bringing a beer.
Paula kicking for me.
Hey, you can't, Paula said you can't kick in her kitchen because she ain't got one yet.
Well, she can kick you for me then. How's that?
Hey, Dan, you're my friend, damn it. Come on, now. I'll put anything in
okay. Okay, folks, let's wrap this up. Thank you all so much for taking part today, and we'll reconvene later.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.